Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Armchair Directors, where each episode we take a look at a director in one of their essential films. Well, Halloween is just around the corner, and what better Halloween film to cover than Alfred Hitchcock's 1960 horror classic Psycho? This film about the psychotic Norman Bates is guaranteed to give you shivers down your spine. With me here today to talk about Alfred Hitchcock once again is Professor Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Always good to have you. So first question we'll start off with is, what is your overall opinion of this film? I saw this film first about 5-6 years ago, and I still think it holds up incredibly well.
I do too. Most people don't think of it as a horror film by today's standards, but it certainly was for the 60s. When Hitchcock wanted to make it, he had to sell people on the idea that people would even want to go to see a movie like this. And they didn't want to fund it, so he used his TV crew and shot it all in black and white and made it for $800,000 in 6 weeks, and it earned more than $40 million.
So this was the crew he worked with on the Alfred Hitchcock Hour?
That's right.
And it was interesting you're talking about TV, because I noticed I just went through like a binge watch period of the Twilight Zone, and a lot of these actors that are in this movie, a lot of them were in Twilight Zone episodes.
A lot of those actors did the TV program just to get some more notoriety. And in the case of Hitchcock, they wanted to work with Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh, yeah. So, you were talking earlier that people may not find it scary by today's standards. So do you still find this movie scary, or do you feel like it's a lot like, say, like the Universal horror films, where they're not necessarily scary, but they have really good atmosphere?
I think everybody knows the movie by the shower scene. I think when people think of Psycho, they think of that shower scene. I think by today's standards, it's not as gory, but I think the fact that what you don't see and what you create in your mind mm-hmm. is much scarier.
Yeah, definitely. I've always found that, because like today's horror movies, like for example, Saw, it's just incredibly gory, and that doesn't really scare me. That just makes me a little bit queasy, and you know, probably want me to make me lose my lunch. But I always found like what you don't see. Yeah, you're right. That's the scary stuff. That's, you know, instead of just blatantly showing you something very graphic.
The shower scene is made up of a lot of little images. If you freeze frame on any one of them, nothing happening in those images is really scary. There's, you know, a close-up of a torso and a close-up of a knife and her screaming mouth, but you don't really see very much, and you certainly don't see what's actually happening. You hear what's actually a knife plunging into a melon. That's how they got that effect. Mm-hmm. And you hear the Bernard Herrmann score, which is what makes it frightening. But if you turn off the music and you just go through the images, it's really not that frightening.
No, yeah, that shower scene, I believe that took a very long time to film.
I think they spent a week on it. And wow. Afterwards, Janet Leigh, when she saw the movie, she said she just wasn't going to be able to take a shower ever again. And Hitchcock told her she could go be dry cleaned.
And I love the editing. It's by George Tomasini, who worked with Hitchcock on most of his films. And you know, that's just an example of great editing. Because I think I took an editing class a few years ago when they used the shower scene as an example of like, this is how to put together a scene very well and effectively.
It is a different way to shoot it. When you think of how they would shoot it today, if it wasn't Hitchcock, they would make the most of the fact that you have a nude woman in the shower and an opportunity to make it very bloody and graphic.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I can definitely see horror films doing it more. Like, they would show the nudity, and then they would show the, you know, all the blood, and just, it would look terrible today if it was redone. And so it was interesting. We consider this film one of the all-time greats, but when it first came out, a lot of people didn't like it. They called it like a B-movie. A lot of people called it smut. So, you know, why did people hate it so badly in its original release?
Well, it was right after the production code. So there were things about it that were, you know, we don't think about it today as being a big deal, but a lot of the things going on in the movie were still considered shocking in the 60s. They hadn't really been done in movies. And this is a silly thing to point out, but the production code used to not even allow you to shoot scenes of bathrooms. So Psycho marks the first time a toilet was seen in the movies. So that was a big deal. But for the audience, it would seem very jarring, like they were seeing things they hadn't been exposed to before. Not necessarily frightening or interesting, but new.
Yeah, I do agree that nowadays it seems pretty tame, but back in the day I can definitely see it as very controversial. So, but do you feel that this film was a sign of what was to come in the 60s with the death of the Hays Code and, you know, 5-6 years later, the birth of New Hollywood?
I don't know if I would give it that much credence. I think Hitchcock was just very interested in making this kind of film and was just ahead of his time.
Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if you had the chance to read the novel by Robert Robert Bloch?
I have glanced through the novel. I know a little bit about the novel. I know the movie's based on it. But Hitchcock added all that bird imagery. The bird imagery is not in the book. There's no Marion Crane from Phoenix, for example. He added all that because he wanted to incorporate that look and feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to lead into the birds, because both movies start Friday at 2:43.
Oh, really?
Yes. The very first thing you see is the landscape, and then superimposed is Friday, 2:43.
I was wondering when he had all the stuffed birds and everything, I wonder if Hitchcock was kind of given a little bit of a sign of things to come for his next movie, like, I'm going to be doing the birds next.
You know, that might have been in the back of his mind, but he was also an English gentleman who was very educated in Audubon and the natural world. So that was an interest of his that he brought into his movies.
And, you know, the real-life influence, of course, of Norman Bates was Ed Gein. And, you know, he's a very popular serial killer in the movie genre. Not only Norman Bates based off of him, but Leatherface and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre was based off of him. And then Buffalo Bill and the Silence of the Lambs movies was also based off of Ed Gein.
That's it. Those are three interesting examples.
So, you know, you were talking earlier a bit about the music by Bernard Herrmann. And, you know, I think him and Hitchcock was probably one of the best, like, collaborations of director and composer. I mean, you think of, you know, those two do well, and then, like, say, Ennio Morricone and Sergio Leone, and then, of course, Williams and Spielberg.
Bernard Herrmann and Hitchcock got along really well for many years. For this movie, Hitchcock didn't want any music, and Bernard Herrmann went ahead and created that famous sequence with the violin screeching and played it. He played it for Hitchcock, and he said, let's use it. And Herrmann was a little surprised. He said, I thought you didn't want to have any music. And Hitchcock said, well, that was just a bad suggestion, which is ironic, really, because the music is really iconic.
Yeah, definitely. So with Alfred Hitchcock, you were talking about earlier about how if, you know, to take the music out, it may not seem that scary. So do you feel that, let's say, if he went completely without any musical score, would you say that maybe the impact on this film would have been a bit lessened?
I'm sure it would. If you even look at the scene where Marion Crane is driving and the policeman is behind her and she keeps looking in the rearview mirror, the music is what makes it suspenseful. It's not just because she's being followed up by a policeman. You really need the sound to increase that level of anxiety.
So it was interesting. I was looking at this. Herrmann did a few of the sound designs, I think, for the birds, but after Psycho, they really ended their musical collaboration. So do you know why that collaboration ended after this movie?
They had a falling out, but for many years they had a very successful collaboration, and the music from The Trouble with Harry was long considered one of Hitchcock's favorite pieces of music for his films.
A funny thing, I remember about 7-8 years ago, I know this seems kind of random, but I was watching like a Volkswagen commercial or something, and they were using the musical score from The Trouble with Harry, and I just found that really funny. It's like, wow, a Hitchcock score and a Volkswagen ad.
That does seem a little strange.
Mm-hmm. What I also really liked about this film was the opening titles by Saul Bass, when you have the horizontal lines coming across as the dun-dun-dun-dun, and I thought it was very well, and it sets the score for the film very well. And Saul Bass did a lot of movies at that time. He was very popular, wasn't he?
He was. He also did the intro for Vertigo. He also did the storyboarding for the shower scene in Psycho.
Mm-hmm. I did hear rumors that he actually directed the shower scene, but I've heard a lot of rumors that that's untrue.
Since the shower scene is so famous, it's impossible to attribute it to anybody but Hitchcock. That was his idea to make it impressionistic with little pieces of film rather than the way it would traditionally have been shot, but you just put the camera in one place and just show a murder.
And I know one of the opening scenes of a movie that really copied the Psycho crawl was Goodfellas, when you're hearing the cars walk by and it's the text coming by. And I felt that was a lot like Psycho, and Scorsese took a little bit from Hitchcock there.
He probably did. Scorsese also likes to insert himself as a cameo like Hitchcock does.
So where was this cameo? I think it was as Marion first enters the office, and you see a guy behind, and it looks a bit like Hitchcock, but I couldn't tell if that was really him or not. Is that him?
That is really him. When she comes back from lunch, she passes him on the street. He's wearing a cowboy hat. He's facing the street.
Mm-hmm. And also another Hitchcock cameo was Alfred Hitchcock's daughter. Was it Pat Hitchcock? Was her name Patrick?
Pat Hitchcock.
Pat Hitchcock, and she was the co-worker of Marion.
She is. She plays her co-worker, Caroline.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I always did enjoy her role, and she had a bigger role in Strangers on a Train, and she plays like the morbid little sister who has all this like funny curiosities and everything. I thought she was funny in that role.
She also has a small role in Stage Fright.
I also really enjoyed the cinematography in this film. It was interesting because before this, Alfred Hitchcock did a bunch of color films. In this movie, you see him go back to black and white. So do you know why he made that return to black and white?
Part of that had to do with making it cheap, using his TV crew. And because it would be less dramatic to show blood in the shower, for example. By the way, that was chocolate sauce.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Chocolate sauce registers as blood in black and white.
Yeah, it does. It, like, the chocolate sauce does give that thickness to blood. It doesn't look like, oh, somebody poured, like, tomato juice or something on it. It does look thick, like, oh, it looks actually blood.
It does. It's very effective.
Mm-hmm. And so, going back, we're talking a little bit about Ed Gein and the influence for this film. So, would you say this film is, like, the really first true serial killer film, like, in the style of, like, say, the Hannibal Lecter movies and Seven?
Maybe of that style and about current serial killers, but I mean, there have always been movies about Jack the Ripper and the movie M, Fritz Lang from the 20s. Mm-hmm. I think serial killers, for some reason, we have a fascination with that kind of crime.
I really like the performance by Janet Leigh in this film, and it's very messes with audiences' expectations because she's the main character of the film, and she gets killed off halfway through the movie.
Yes, and when they released Psycho, they didn't let you into the theater after the movie had begun. They didn't want people coming in late, so late that Marion Crane was gone. They wanted to make sure you saw it from the very beginning. So if you didn't show up at the very beginning, they wouldn't even let you in the theater.
And Janet Leigh, she was pretty popular at that time because during around this time, she was also in Touch of Evil, which came out a few years earlier. And then a few years later, she was in The Manchurian Candidate. And then I also really, of course, you have to talk about the performance by Anthony Perkins. And I really loved this role by him. I think he really played the role very well.
The interesting thing about Anthony Perkins and Janet Leigh in this movie is that the whole movie is about the dual nature of man. So Hitchcock deliberately chose John Gavin as the boyfriend because he looked a little bit like Tony Perkins. And he cast Vera Miles as the sister in this really ugly wig because she had shaved her head for a movie that she had just been in. And she's supposed to be the good sister. And Marion is supposed to be the bad sister with a proclivity for crime. Norman Bates is supposed to be the dark side. And John Gavin's supposed to be the good version. So they look a little bit similar. And Hitchcock does a lot of things with the gothic element of mirrors. Mirrors represent the split personality and introspection. So there's lots of shots of compacts, rearview mirrors, behind open bathroom doors where they've got a mirror reflected in the washroom mirror. When checking into the Bates Motel, there's a mirror that splits Janet Leigh's image in her room. In the beginning of the movie, Janet Leigh starts off in a white ensemble. She's wearing a slip and a brassiere. And then when she has stolen the money, you see her in her house packing, and she's wearing the same thing, but now it's black.
Mm-hmm. I also really like the use of shadows in this film because you see a lot of people walk towards things, and they're always in shadow and in silhouette, especially with the famous shower scene when we see just the wig and the costume, but not the face.
It's a gothic technique. The movie's very gothic. You think about that Nathaniel Hawthorne-esque house and that scene where Vera Miles finds the room where Mrs. Bates has been staying, and there's an indentation in the bed. It's very reminiscent of Hawthorne's short story, A Rose for Emily. So it gives it that kind of creepy, American puritanical, with a twist, like a scary twist.
I also love the shot when the private detective is investigating the checkout book, whatever it is, and he sees the signature of Marion, and then you just have Norman Bates just craning his head like this, and he's just looking towards it, and he just looks so disturbingly creepy.
You know, the funny thing about what you just mentioned is that if you look very carefully at Tony Perkins' performance, he acts kind of like a bird, a little mm-hmm. darting, you know, the way he holds his head. It's very bird-like.
Yeah, and I believe when he's stuffing the bird, I believe that is a slang term in Britain, and I believe that it's his desire to have Janet Leigh.
Well, there's a whole voyeuristic thing going on there, mm-hmm. starting off in the beginning, flying into the window, but then Norman Bates actually spying on her in the room.
Yeah. Going back to a Rear Window, definitely of, once again, Hitchcock touching on voyeurism and peeping Toms.
That's one of his favorite themes. He also gets the number 13 in there as often as he can. Hitchcock knew that people had a superstitious reaction to the number 13. So he puts it in Psycho in many places where it's a turning point. So the number 13 shows up when Marion checks into the Bates Motel. Norman starts to go for the number 3, and then he takes the key number 1. The license plate that Marion drives adds up to 13. At the car dealership, when Marion trades cars, the number on the dealership adds up to 13. Each incident of the number 13 provides an opportunity for her fate to change in the film.
No, you're just talking about the car salesman. I have to say, that car salesman was far too trusting of Janet Leigh. I mean, she's paying him full in cash. She's like, just give me the car. I don't even want to test it out. I just want it. I would have been like, you know what? Come back to me in a day or two and then tell me if you still want the car.
I'm not sure car salesmen work that way. I think a bird in the hand, no pun intended, is worth two in the bush. I think you go for what you can. He knew the policeman was right across the street. He saw him. Mm-hmm. So he knew if there was anything really going on, he had recourse. Mm-hmm. There was nothing for him to be afraid of.
I guess so. I guess he was a bit far too trusting. Maybe I'd be a bit more cautious.
He seemed a little suspicious to me.
Yeah. Going back to a bit of Anthony Perkins, I did feel that this role typecasted him for the rest of his career. Because I was watching a film, it was Murder on the Orient Express. This was about, say, 13 so years later. And he was being investigated, and they asked him, well, what was your relationship with your mother? And I was just like, oh, come on, that's just too obvious.
I think that this movie probably made him a lot of money and derailed his career completely. Because mm-hmm. you can't not think of him in this role. Mm-hmm. He's always going to be Norman Bates.
Yeah. He was actually on an episode of Saturday Night Live in the 70s. And then he goes, I'm going to tell you who the real Anthony Perkins is. And there's this fly coming along. and then like another one he's doing, the Norman Bates Hotel Management School. And it was just really funny.
You know, interestingly, in the movie, he's really very sympathetic.
Yeah, definitely. You do feel, he does seem a bit like nervous and shy around everybody. And
vulnerable.
Yes. And what are the other performances that stick out to you in this film?
I like the scene in the office when the real estate developer gives Marion the money mm-hmm. and Patricia Hitchcock is a flutter because he's talking to Marion and not to her. There's so many great dynamics going on in there. And there's so many secrets that are exposed, or everybody in the movie has a secret. The character of Caroline, the coworker, has hidden tranquilizers on her wedding day. And Marion and her boyfriend are lunchtime lovers, so they're hiding and sneaking around. Cassidy, the guy who is buying the house, hid cash on his taxes. Marion's boss hides a whiskey bottle in his desk. Norman hides the biggest secret of all. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of secrets, which is also another gothic element.
Yes.
The way they expose each one of these characters as being the same kind of character
mm-hmm. really sets the tone for the movie.
It does set the tone for the movie. We all have good and evil in us. Some things are left hidden. Some things are exposed whether you want them to be or not.
One performance I really liked in this film was Frank Abagnale, The Private Eye, and that was Martin Balsam. And I really always, after watching Psycho, I went back to a lot of the movies I watched around this time, and like, oh wow, he's in a lot of them. He was one of the jurors in 12 Angry Men. He was in All the President's Men. He was in quite a few movies.
He's a good actor in this film. The way Hitchcock treats that second murder of him is very different from the way he approaches the murder scene in the shower. Mm-hmm. For that scene, he puts the camera really high up, and you see everything happening from like a God's eye perspective. Mm-hmm. You see Mother come out with the knife, and then you have this big shot of his head, and then he falls down the stairs. It's like you're being able to see more, so you see what you think is going to be, that's got to mm-hmm. be Mrs. Bates. But in fact, it's
Norman.
It's Norman.
I do like it, and the music's really quiet just as he reaches the top of the stairs. It's quiet for a while, and then out comes Mom, and then you see him with the blood on his face, and then it goes right back to the music. And I thought that was very well done with the sound.
Yes, and the slowly opening door.
You know, you're talking about the sister in the film, Vera Miles, and she's just like Martin Balsam. I was surprised by all the number of things she's been in. She was also in another Hitchcock film with The Wrong Man, which is really we could talk about that film. It was a very different kind of Hitchcock film. And then she also did work with John Ford. She was in The Searchers and The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, and she was also in a Twilight Zone episode. So, you know, she was pretty big in demand at that time.
She was supposed to be another Hitchcock blonde. He wanted her for Vertigo.
Yep.
But she got pregnant. Mm-hmm. And he never forgave her for that, by the way. He was always angry that that didn't work out the way he had intended. But he fulfilled, she fulfilled her contract by doing this role for Psycho. But it was, she had just done Five Branded Women. Her head had been shaved. She was wearing this terrible looking artificial blonde wig. Very unflattering. I don't know that she was very happy with that role. But she does a good job with
it. Yeah, I thought she did a good job.
If you watch Vertigo, though, they had planned all along that it was going to be Vera Miles, not Kim Novak. So if you look at that painting of Carlotta, they had actually painted Vera Miles.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. And you know, one thing I noticed about this one with Vera Miles in it is when what's-his-name goes to check out the Bates Motel and she's stuck at the warehouse, she backs back and there's all this stack of rakes behind her. And they look like talons. And so that's kind of foreshadowing what's going to happen with Norman Bates. I like that shot.
That is a good shot.
Yeah. I would say there's one thing I don't like about this film. It's at the end, and it's when they have the psychiatrist comes in and he gives this very long-winded explanation. I guess in my opinion, I felt that they didn't need to explain that. I felt like we could kind of make our own infer it for ourselves, and I just feel that it was a bit long-winded and they kind of could have cut that scene out.
I don't think it works as well as it might have done in the 60s. It does feel like a wrapping up and somebody tying up all the loose ends by telling you rather than showing you. Yeah. They could have just shown you that last scene of Norman with his mother's voice superimposed and the skull and the fly and all of that stuff. They should have just gone with that and let you figure it out on your own.
Yeah, it does feel like we're just going to tell you everything just in case you didn't get it.
Right, just in case.
I really think that this film created what we would call the slasher genre. I mean, if you think of Norman Bates, it definitely had an influence on other famous bad guys like Michael Myers and Freddy Krueger and Jason. But, you know, so one of the films I feel very similar to this film in the slasher genre is Halloween, which I probably think is the only good slasher movie.
I think it probably did lead into those movies. Of course, those movies take more of a graphic approach. Mm-hmm. They take something like Psycho and bring you into the shower so you feel like you're being stabbed to death with all the blood and gore that they put into those movies. I think it's not quite as elegant.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think, like I said, Halloween, I think, did a good job because it's not extremely bloody and graphic, but like all the other ones they did after that didn't do that at all. But I feel that if there's a slasher genre that really closely resembled Psycho, I would say it's the first Halloween movie.
I agree.
So what were your? I wonder what your thoughts were on the the Psycho is a franchise. I mean, they made 3 sequels, I believe, and I know they made a really embarrassing remake in 1998.
They did reshoot it frame for frame with the second one, and I don't see the point. And they did it in color. Now, I do think that the Bates Motel TV series is terrific.
You do?
I do. It's anachronistic because it's set in present time. You know, you have people with cell phones and whatnot. If it's supposed to lead up to what happens in the movie in 1960, that doesn't really work. But it does work in terms of showing you this really strange relationship between Norman and his mother. And his mother's played beautifully by Vera Farmiga. She makes a great character because she's both creepy and vulnerable. And you understand where she's coming from, but you can't help but think she's really weird. And, you know, young Norman Bates is just doomed to grow up to what happens in Psycho. It's very well done.
Very well done. Yeah, I saw the commercial for it, and I was like, oh, I'm not sure. Like, for, you know, he's, like, listening to an iPod. And I felt like, oh, this modernization might not be good. But, wow, I'll have to definitely check that out because I have been hearing good reviews about it.
It's really a character study more than anything. They use the same house. Not literally the same house, but they use the same kind of set. So you feel like you're in the same place.
I was wondering what your thoughts were on Alfred Hitchcock in the 60s, because when you think about it, it was an interesting decade for him. He had this film, he did The Birds, 2 classics, but you see him branch out, like you said earlier, in television with the Alfred Hitchcock Hour. So I wonder what your thoughts were about him in that decade.
I like Psycho, and I think he did a good job with The Birds. I think by the time he got to Family Plot, I don't think Family Plot stands up as well as his other movies. It feels like a TV movie. Mm-hmm. And not a very good one.
That was his last film, right?
That was his last film.
So do you feel like after The Birds, they may not necessarily be bad, but they weren't very memorable?
I think Frenzy was his last good one from that era.
Yeah. I remember watching Torn Curtain with Paul Newman and
Julie Andrews.
Julie Andrews. It wasn't bad. I just compared to his other films, I just didn't particularly care for it very much.
It seemed like a second string movie.
Yeah. And I understand you, this film was just playing a few weeks ago in theaters, and you told me before the show that you had a chance to see it and you took your students there.
I did. We went and saw it at the mall in Columbia. It was a great experience to see it in a real theater. Also good to see the movie as it's meant to be seen with other people and mm-hmm. with the full impact of it being a movie release.
Yeah. So how did your students react to it? I was curious.
Well, they were very interested in the fact that they'd heard of the movie. The younger students had heard of the movie but never seen anything other than the shower scene. So it was nice to be able to introduce them to the movie. They were surprised by how people were supposed to be shocked that Marion and her boyfriend were sneaking around and having an affair. They didn't think that seemed like such a terrible thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, modern this is from audience. The 60s, yeah. Exactly.
And so since we're kind of on the topic of Halloween movies, what other movies would you say you like to watch annually during the Halloween month?
I'm not a horror movie person, so I don't really like any of the horror. I don't really like any of the Halloween movies.
Not even, but like the classic stuff, like the, say, the Universal horror films like Frankenstein.
Oh, well, okay. Let me revise my answer then. Okay. I think my favorite Halloween movie then is Young Frankenstein.
Young Frankenstein.
But I love Mel Brooks, and Mel Brooks does some great spoofs of Alfred Hitchcock in High Anxiety.
Yeah, High Anxiety.
The scene that he does in the shower in High Anxiety is hilarious. So yes, I like Young Frankenstein. Yeah.
Interesting bit of trivia you brought up, that shower scene in High Anxiety. The guy that beats him to death with the newspaper, that was Baltimore native Barry Levinson, who went on to direct a Rain Man and everything.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was in that movie. I looked it up recently. I was like, oh, wow, that was Barry Levinson.
I never realized that. I show that scene in my class all the time.
So for I'm not modern horror because I think it's really bad now, but I would say I like the classic horror stuff. So during Halloween, I would probably say like The Shining, The Thing, maybe watch a few of the Universal horror films. I watch Halloween, of course, and then probably like maybe Rosemary's Baby or The Exorcist.
Boy, you like the hardcore stuff.
So a last question I have for you is tell us a little about the classes you teach here at HCC.
Every semester I teach world cinema. I also teach American cinema online. And then occasionally I teach extra courses like Hitchcock. I also teach women in film with Teresa Foster, our women's studies specialist, film and philosophy with our philosophy specialist, and I teach the history of animated film with Dave Hinton, who teaches gaming and simulation here at HCC.
And folks, I just want to thank you again for help creating this show, because folks, she comes up with the movies, the directors, and she comes up with all the guests. So I want to take this time to thank you for doing all this, because you know, I think when we first met, I think I was a bit all over the place as far as ideas for the show is, and you've really helped kind of refine it and to give it a, what's the word, structure.
Well, you're very welcome. It's been a pleasure to be on the show.
Well, thank you very much. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We were talking today about Alfred Hitchcock and his horror classic Psycho. If you want a good scare this Halloween, you can't go wrong with this masterpiece. Be sure to listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m. and Sunday at 2:30 p.m. You can also listen to the show anytime at our temporary podcast site, thearmchairdirectors.podomatic.com. When we get the official website up, we will definitely let you know. Professor Westaver, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thank you very much.
For The Armchair Directors, I'm Alex Baker saying a boy's best friend is his mother.